It's time to get green. Doug Oster and Jessica Walliser are here. All natural, no pesticides, no artificial ingredients. The Organic Gardeners are on KDKA Radio.
Yes, they are. Just moments away from the legend that, of course, is the Organic Gardeners. Doug Oster and Jessica Walliser, both from the Tribune Review. Doug from EverybodyGardens.com. All right, 10th caller wins a $25 gift certificate to that great place out in Wexford that is Sorgles. And boy, could you do a lot with that this time of year. 412-922-1020. And the 10th caller will win that. We've got that great certificate from Janoski's coming up within the half hour. But here they are. They're always great. Together talking gardening, the Organic Gardeners, Doug Oster and Jessica Walliser.
Good morning. I am Doug Oster from Everybody Gardens and the Tribune Review.
And I'm horticulturist Jessica Walliser.
And we had a nice talk before we came on the air, catching up. Hadn't seen each other
it's
in a
couple
of weeks.
It's funny, when one of us misses a show, it's like you'll have to, you give a couple of weeks worth of
how's your
info
sister?
To share.
How's you get any time in the garden?
Yes. Well, to answer that second question, I did indeed get some time in the garden yesterday. Just for a couple of hours is all I needed to clean up the front gardens. I still have the back gardens to do, but helpful.
I went out and just sat with a cup of coffee, and the chickens came over, and the dog came over, and magnolias blooming, and daffodils are really looking good. You know, this is probably the peak right now.
Quiet
and listen to the birds. This morning when I was getting in the truck to come here, I heard a tom turkey calling, you know, right in the backyard. And so I went back to see if I could see him, but couldn't see him. And, it's nice. Like, getting a lot of messages like, just glad spring's here. I'm like, I know it.
Yeah. The bird song has been so gorgeous this spring.
Yeah.
Such a nice thing to wake up to.
Yeah, this morning was really nice.
Yeah.
So I've been planting some spring crops, you know, in the vegetable garden. I've got a video I got to shoot Monday. I'm going to do radicchio, really pretty radicchio planted with white pansies or white violas.
Oh, won't that be a pretty combination?
I just want to do something different, something fun, and, you know, that'll be one thing for the video. I don't know what the heck else I'll shoot, but if I walk around the garden today,
I'll
figure out something. But today I am out on the road again. I'll be at the Murrysville Home Show, which is at the Murrysville Sports Center, today at 2 o'clock, talking spring gardening and growing organically and giving away a subscription to my Seed of the Month Club. That's a big show. You know, Murrysville, the first time was last year, and it's just packed. So come early. There's bleachers, plenty of seats for everybody. If you come late, I make fun of you. It's fun because you have to walk right by me. Like, there's no other way in.
Yeah,
in,
so you have to walk right in front of you? Oh, boy. Don't come late, whatever you do, people.
In our little talk this morning, you were talking about bagworms, that becomes a big question for us.
It becomes a big question, and it can be a big issue. You know, a lot of pests will get pests on plants, and they cause a little bit of damage, but you know, the plant will outgrow it, or the next season it will completely recover. But bagworms,
what does it look like?
Man, so they're sort of little elongated sacks, right? They come to a point on the bottom. I guess that would be awl shaped, right?
What shaped?
Awl, A-W-L.
Oh, okay.
That's sort of tapered at the end. They are probably between 1 and 1.5 inches long, depending on how large they are. And they're really, actually really interesting insects, but they tend to be on evergreens. So like arborvitae, juniper, spruce.
When you were telling me the story, I was just like, you said, well, I went out there and I was so fascinated. And I said, that's our Jessica.
Yeah.
She sees a bug and she's just like, your eyes lit up.
Well, no, they didn't. I actually got this.
No, when you were telling the story,
Oh, when
your
I was telling the story. But actually, when I saw them on these two big arborvitae we have in the back, like I got that sinking feeling because I know that they're a pest that can really cause significant damage. And though they're easy to control, the best way to control them is to physically pick them off of the plant. But this arborvitae that they're on is 15 feet tall. So, you know, I got my pole pruner out and I started cutting them out of there. There were only a couple dozen on there, but it is really critical if you have them on there this time of year, because each one of those bags that belonged to a female can have up to 1,000 eggs in it. And in another, usually in May, they hatch. And those little baby bagworm caterpillars that emerge can spin a little piece of silk that acts like a little umbrella and carries them to other plants. It spreads them around your plants. And then they start to grow, and then they will slowly, over time, build a bag of their own. And it's interesting because the females, Once they hit that maturity age to build the bag, they never leave the bag. They have no eyes. Mm. They're in the bag all the time. And then the males emerge and they fly and they find the bag with the female and they mate. And then the female has all the eggs inside of the bag. So right now is the time. So, of course, being the bug nerd that I am, I pulled one off the plant and I couldn't wait to cut it open and see what was inside.
How hard is it to pull off? How hard
well,
is it?
Well, technically, you're supposed to cut them off, okay, because they do make a little band of silk that wraps around the branch pretty tightly and can girdle the branch. So technically, you should cut them off. But at the very least, you need to pull them off.
So go ahead. You're approaching your bagworm. And
oh,
then
yeah.
What?
I cut it open. I wanted to see what it looked like inside. I should show you the picture. Like, it's a really cool, it looks like a pupal case in there, but it's like filled with eggs. Instead of being filled with like the adult form metamorphosizing, it's like filled with eggs that are going to be hatching out this spring. So I was glad to find them when I did. I think I got them all off of the tree. But if you have evergreens at your house, go out, look for them. They're little, they're brown. They're covered in sort of like parts of the plant. So they look a little bit like the plant, but they're brown this time of year.
So I was talking to the Davey guys last week, and I was wondering about my hemlock woolly adelgid because I haven't seen it yet, and they just said, well, it's too early.
So yeah,
I'm worried about that. We'll have to
take a
look.
Well, we had a couple of minus 20 degree days, so they might have got knocked back a little bit.
I hope so anyway.
Yeah.
But, it's just nice to see a break in the weather. Tulips are coming. You know, my tulips all have to be in the vegetable garden in that fenced-in area.
Yeah.
Otherwise, the deer are going to tear them down. Chickens are eating the hosta. You know, you keep the deer away.
And
I was out there, and I'm like, "Are you eating my hosta?" It didn't answer.
Yeah, of course.
But still, I was like, "You just can't win."
But at least they're giving you eggs.
I mean, how would you keep a chicken off anything? You couldn't spray anything on it.
No, you have to fence anything. Yeah, you got like fences all over your garden.
I know. I guess it's nice to have them in the
garden. That's the problem with free range, right? Free range really just means like eat everything and poop everywhere. That's what it means.
I've learned it's especially important to keep the gate closed to the vegetable garden because they're going in the vegetable garden. And my crocuses were safe. And then I saw them out there. They're pulling the greens on the crocus and pulling the bulb out. You know, I kept the chipmunks and the rabbits and the deer off them. Now I'm dealing with the chickens.
All right. If you'd like to join free range, I can relate to that. Anyway, I don't know.
That was your youth.
Yeah, just something to think about. All right. 866-391-1020. Dollar Bank Instant Act. Nobody cares what I think.
You know, the free range is not where you cook your macaroni and cheese, okay?
I can't even afford macaroni and cheese at this point.
All right.
866-391-1020. Dollar Bank Instant Access. KDKRadio.com. You can text them at the Wright Automotive text line, the best deal in town. Congratulations to Barbara, the winner of that $25 gift certificate from Sorgel. Stay with us. More to come with Doug and Jess in just a couple of moments on KDK Radio.
Doug and Jessica teach you how to keep it green. The Organic Gardeners are on KDKA Radio.
You know, Holy Week starts, of course, this week. Passover coming up this week, so we're going to be focusing on those great topics, recipes, traditions today on the Coons Cooking Hour in less than an hour. Let's head to Ben Avenue though, and say hi to Tom joining Jessica and Doug. Hey, how are you doing, Tom? Good morning. Welcome to KDKA Radio.
Good morning. Thank you very much. I have a question about roses. My house has been covered with shade for many years, but at the end of fall, we removed a number of trees that were dying and old. So now the entire backyard has sun. And I've always liked roses, but I was unable to grow them back there. So I've planted 8 rose bushes so far, but there are some roses that I would like to take a cutting from that are sentimental value to the family and try to grow them in my yard. What is the best way to grow a bush from a cutting? I kind of remember when I was a kid, my mother taking cuttings and putting them under a jar with moisture, but I don't know what really might work.
Yeah, I mean the way your mom did it can be an effective way to start rose cuttings.
That was the way they all did it back then.
The challenge with that though is you always have to take way more than you need because some of them are going to rot, some of them are not going to root.
You're going to cook them.
Because if you're putting them under glass, you need a shady spot to do that. If you put them in full sun underneath a jar like that, they're really going to get fried. Yeah. So, if you do that method, do it in a nice shady spot tucked under a shrub or something. Always use rooting hormone. whether you're doing it that way, or I prefer to do rose cuttings in like a pot of clean new potting soil. I think right. that, you know, they start roots a little bit faster that
so
way.
Talk a little bit about the rooting hormone, what that is and what it does.
So rooting hormones, so plants produce hormones just like people do, and they produce a group of hormones called auxins is one of them. And auxins are responsible for cell division and growth. And what they do when you dip the base of that cutting into the rooting hormone is they stimulate the production of it's adventitious roots. It's extra roots off of the bottom of a plant where there's normally not roots. And so that's how you build a whole new root system.
And where should he cut that? When he goes to that rose bush and when?
Yeah, so that's the question. So you can do it two different ways. You can do like a soft wood cutting a little bit later this spring, which is the new growth, right? Or you can do a cane cutting, which would be later in the season, maybe late summer, early fall, which is sort of the little, a woodier portion of the stem.
So with the soft wood, what exactly is that? What is that on the when he's looking for softwood on the rose bush? What would that be?
So you think of like the new herbaceous growth that really grows out in the spring, and you get these lush mm-hmm, canes, mm-hmm. and sometimes they'll develop the flower buds on the end. You obviously don't want a portion of it; you want to cut the flower bud off of it. But that nice tender succulent growth, and you know maybe 2-3 inches of it, cut that off. Remove all the leaves but the top one or two.
Dip it
in the rooting hormone, and then put it in a pot of potting soil. And then I like to just use a clear plastic bag.
Kind of using the same technique that they were using with the glass.
Exactly.
Over it, right?
Exactly.
To keep the humidity up.
Keep the humidity up for probably, I would say, about 6 weeks in there, and water, well, you know, water it when necessary. About 6 weeks, and then you're going to start to get a root system.
Tom, what about those roses are special for you?
They were planted by my mom many, many years ago, and they're in our old house, so they're still there.
Yeah.
How many cuttings should he take? Because these are important.
Yeah, so. I mean, I would, if you want one plant, I would take probably 6 or 7 cuttings, and you might get 6 or 7. I mean, you might have 6 or 7 of them take, and that's excellent. Then you can share some with friends. But
so when he goes over there, take a bunch of pots with him. Take the root tone with them and everything? Or,
well, I mean,
are you taking the cuttings and could you put them in water and then do that all at home?
You can do that. You can put them in water if you want, or just put them in a plastic baggie with a damp paper towel and keep them cool. I would try to get them, you know, in the rooting hormone and pot it up within a couple of hours mm-hmm. of them being cut. But you don't have to do it right there on the spot. But when you do it, recut the stem.
Oh,
right,
you bring
so
them back.
Cut a
okay.
little bit
okay,
off, then
sense.
Dip it in the hormone, and then put it in the
Well,
in
good
the
luck,
soil.
Tom, and please keep us
Thank
posted.
You. You've been very thorough. I appreciate it.
Keep us posted on how it goes. It'll be interesting to hear.
Yeah.
All right, Cheryl in Pittsburgh up next for Doug and Jess, Organic Gardeners, KDK Radio.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I first want to say thank you, Doug. My husband and I got to go to Joe Ham's barn yesterday.
All right.
And it's beautiful. It's just beautiful. We got to meet the sisters, and they explained everything. And they told me to say in 2 weeks they're having a Daffodil Society free show. So anyway, so the question I had was, how do I plant my lettuce seeds now in, I think you said, in compost?
Right. When I'm planting, you know, well neither one of us are planting, you know, oftentimes we're putting compost down and just putting lettuce seeds right in there. I like to do it with making this carpet of lettuce. I think, do you, like...
I do mine in rows.
Yeah, and spread them out properly.
No, I mean, I thin them. Some I do as just really closely spaced, and then I harvest them as baby greens. But if I want, like, a full head of lettuce, then I try to space
yeah,
them.
Yeah, I just like to make that carpet, and again, I'm doing a lot of the thinning. I like the thinning part and eating them small, like you said, the baby mm-hmm. greens, microgreens. And so there's
I
not...
can use my own compost?
Sure.
You know, the... Oh, great. Okay.
As long as it's finished compost. If you can dig in there and you can still see like parts of things that are recognizable, then it's not finished.
Okay.
It should look like crumbly, dark brown dirt. Then it's finished.
And if it's not, where's the best place to get a good compost?
Any good nursery will have a nice bag of compost for you.
And
inexpensively. And actually, I saw that if you have a municipality that uses the leaf compost. They've started dumping it. I was on my way to Washington Library, and I got up to the top of the hill, and I said, "That compost is here."
And it's gone so quickly.
Yes, and I was like, "Oh, it's going to be a nice weekend. It's going to be gone. There'll be one more dump for me in Ross Township." But what Cheryl was talking about there was a place called Joe Ham's Daffodil Hortus. Hortus means collection. It's down in Washington. In my opinion, it's the greatest collection of daffodils, certainly in Pennsylvania, and it's free, and you can go down there and see them. I'm going to be there a week from Monday doing a video for my Gardening with Friends video there. It's a cool place, a lot of fun.
All right, let's take care of this Dollar Bank Instant Access in 1 minute. It's from Tom. "I have an ornamental cherry tree that only partially bloomed this year. Last year, it developed a green type of scale on the bark that is still somewhat visible this year. Do you think I may have lost the tree?"
No, that green scale that you're seeing on there is probably lichens. And lichens are not problematic. They just live on the exterior of the tree. They do not cause issues.
But boy, does it bring up a lot of questions.
It does. People ask about lichens all the time.
I think it's like
some kind of mold
or something.
Yeah, it's not. There's nothing to worry about with that. You shouldn't try to scrape it off. Don't spray anything on it. Just let it be. There's absolutely no harm being done to the tree.
And with part of it not blooming, what do you think?
I think that's probably something else. I mean, with those ornamental cherry trees like that, especially if it did they say it was a weeping one or just an ornamental cherry? Okay, so they can get certain kinds of cankers and other fungal diseases. So you might want to have an arborist come out from Davy Tree, take a look at it and assess it and make sure there's not any bigger issues.
All right, don't forget, Doug's going to be at the Murraysville Home Show today. We'll tell you more about that in a little bit. We've got a gift certificate from Janoski's to give away. And, of course, we've got plenty more phone calls. We'd love to hear from you via Dollar Bank, Instant Access, KDKRadio.com, and you can text them on the Right Automotive Line, best deal in town.
Doug and Jessica teach you how to keep it green. The Organic Gardeners are on KDKA Radio.
10th caller right now wins a gift certificate from Janoski's at 412-922-1020. 412-922-1020. Douglas.
Hey, come out and see me today, 2 o'clock at the Murraysville Home Show. That's at the Murraysville Sports Zone. I'm talking spring gardening and growing organically, and I'm giving away a subscription to the Seed of the Month Club.
All right, let's say hi to Fred, who's up next for Doug and Jess from Laurel Gardens. How you doing, Fred?
I'm doing fantastic, Doug. I mean, Rob.
What's on your mind, Fred?
I listened to you on around October 15th, and I planted my garlic, the red.
Mm-hmm.
And I put the straw over it. My question is, I've been away for a week, and it's really, it's up about 8-9 inches through the straw. What do I do next?
Enjoy it.
Just wait.
Watch it.
It's a nice part about garlic. It's not much work.
Go to the center of that plant and pinch that little fat bud in the middle and eat it raw out in the garden and go and give your wife a big kiss.
Is it ready now?
No. We're just... I'll just harvest the greens sparingly. You know, you don't want to harvest all the greens. Yeah. The greens give the power into the... or the energy into the bulb. Okay. So next, what's going to happen... If it's a certain type of variety, it's going to send up a seed head called a scape, S-C-A-P-E. When that comes up and makes a turn, remove that. So, again, the energy goes in the bulb. And eat that, too. That's one of my favorite things. Do you like the scapes?
Okay.
They're all right.
Oh, man, I make pesto out of them. I just love them. Get them while they're really nice and tender. And then you can, the other thing I do is I leave a couple scapes out in the garden, and there's enough energy in that stalk that the top where the flower is will put on these little seeds called bulbettes or bulbels. What would it technically be?
I call them bulbettes.
Right. I guess bulbettes, but
okay.
You're probably right.
Whatever.
As usual. And those are little clones of the garlic below, and you can nibble on those. And then when we get to July, when 50% of those greens turn brown, it's time to pull it, and then you'll get the payoff. Laurel Gardens, I'm in Ross, so let's see. I'll have to drive around Laurel Gardens and see where that garlic is. I'd like to see some of that red garlic.
I think he's hoping you're going to volunteer to give him some.
I'm going to volunteer to pick some and take some.
Oh, there you go. Yeah. And really, for me, with my garlic, I don't do any of those extra little harvests in there that Doug does. I just snap off the scapes if they're produced. Like the hardneck varieties will produce, I think it's the hardnecks, right, that mm-hmm. make the scape. Mm-hmm. I'll pinch those off. And really, I do nothing else to my garlic but let it sit there until it's halfway brown. And even sometimes,
like last year, it was early.
I'm still eating garlic from last year.
Oh, you're lucky. We're out of the good stuff.
It did so well in those. I stored it in paper egg cartons. And oh my gosh, it's done so well. So, I mean, it's still like plump and
that's
juicy
a great
and
idea.
Everything. Yep.
That's a great idea.
I did a little video on how I store it, and it like went viral. I put it on Facebook, and we have it on the Savvy Gardening website, and it's gotten like more views than any of our other videos. It's really just an easy way to store it.
That's
especially
a great
if you
idea.
Get like extra large eggs where they have like the high post in the middle of the egg carton so you can fit those nice big cloves in there. And I sort of tip them on the side so the stalk lays to the side and they store in the counter. It's the right humidity or in the cupboard. And it just is the longest storing when I store
them.
And
the family's just looking and keep opening it. Where are the eggs?
No.
Where
are... They're not in the refrigerator.
Mom, where are the eggs?
You store them in the cupboard, in the dark cupboard. But that's really how I get the longest life.
That's cool.
Yeah.
Hey, we've got a right on amount of text message for Doug and Jess. It says, we are building a cabin in the woods as our primary residence. 4 wooded acres. We don't want a grass yard. Any ideas for landscaping?
Moss. Right? That would be the perfect place for a moss lawn.
Love your moss.
I saw one of the most beautiful gardens. Where were we? We were for a garden tour event. Was that Quebec maybe? And we were in this garden and
Quebec
they
City.
Had the most beautiful moss lawn. Of course, no mowing. They had like lawn chairs sitting out on it. It was just absolutely beautiful. And that would be the perfect environment for it. Because if you're in the woods, it's a bad place to try to grow grass.
Mm-hmm.
But man, that would be moss. Or like a woodland, you know.
Maybe sweet woodruff or something like that.
Yeah, sweet woodruff if you want like a ground cover. Or you could do like ferns, like carpet of ferns. You could do lots of different just sort of low-growing, shady perennials like some of the bleeding hearts and corydalis and even like alamium would work. So it's just like a ton of mixed shade perennials that would do really well in that setting.
It'd be fun.
Yeah.
You know what? I meant to tell you, I lost my epimedium.
Oh.
I can't believe it. It was sitting there in the fall. It was, you know, and I was looking for the blooms, and I was like, geez, it's not here. Huh. Now, somebody gave me another variety. I think it's like a purple variety. I'm going to put it in, but... Oh, I hate when that happens.
Yeah.
Tough lives in your epimedium. I mean, that can be
good
really...
Good for you for pronouncing it right, Rob.
That can be very,
kudos
very
you.
Painful.
You have learned, yeah.
Well, I've been being brainwashed for over a decade.
All right, let's remove his epimedium, and then we'll see if he's better.
That like the Operation game? All right, listen, take a short break.
Doug and Jessica teach you how to keep it green. The Organic Gardeners are on KDKA Radio.
All right, Paul Canisberg, winner of that gift certificate from Janoski's. Here's Doug.
Time for Mrs. Know-It-All. She's a grower, horticulturist, and our own garden goddess. Good morning, Denise.
Good morning. I was a little busy outside yesterday, hoping to get a little more done today.
Are you a little sore today? I am.
Yeah, you know what hurts more than anything? My feet.
Oh, really?
Just walking back and forth and, you know, standing and, you know, my feet hurt more than anything.
Well, hopefully, maybe it'll rain a little bit later today and you can get a little bit of rest on those.
I hope so, too, actually, because I actually planted yesterday, so.
Oh, you need to water it in, right?
That's right. Give them a good start. So, on the 27th of the month, I'm actually going to be out at the Beaver Valley Mall, and I'm speaking for the Gladiola Society, and it's going to be open to everybody on edible flowers. And then the 28th, I'm going to be out at Seven Springs for their brand new home and garden show, and I'll be doing my urban myths and legends in the garden talk out there.
And I've heard that talk, and that's a really good talk. I've heard that one at the garden. Where was that? The Garden Club of Pennsylvania.
One of the garden clubs.
Denise,
do you grow glads?
I do. In fact, I was speaking to the master gardeners up in Newcastle a couple weeks ago, and they had a small little exhibitor table, and they were selling glads. And I got these really. The Glad Society was there, and they had these beautiful lavender and white ones.
Ooh.
So, yeah, they had to come home with me.
You know, I feel like, and gladiolas for me are like, they are a plant with major rewards, right? They don't take much to plant. They don't require a lot of you. And they give you these amazing spikes of long-lasting blooms. Like, I think they're really one of those plants that are underplanted.
And I've had them actually come back year after year.
Yep.
You know, and you don't always get that lucky with bulbs. They kind of peter out after a few years. These come right back.
Yeah, good. Well, good. Well,
thank you, Mrs. Know-It-All.
She's going to be a busy spring for Denise.
Yeah.
My goodness.
Yep.
All right, let's say hi to Bill in Gibsonia. Hey, Bill, you're on the air. Welcome to KDK Radio.
Hi. I have a question regarding, I use the Jonathan Green product, and I use the Step One. And I'm thinking about using, I use the Step One about April 1st of April, and I'm thinking about using Revita also. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, we love Revita. There's two different types of Revita. I like the less expensive one. It's a balanced fertilizer, but there's another one that they have for lawns that's high nitrogen. It's like a 12.
Oh, wow.
4-4 or something. I like the 3-4-3, just balanced for roots and everything.
But my question is, was the Jonathan Green Step One, and you'll have to forgive me, I mean, their program is really great. It's sort of like the organic version of a Weed and Feed. Is Step One the corn gluten meal, or is Step One the fertilizer?
It's, well, all I know is that it's a crabgrass killer.
So that's the corn gluten meal. That's the crabgrass preventer. So my thing is, if you're going to do Revita on your lawn on top of, you know, or in succession to the Jonathan Green product, you don't want to choose something that's really high in nitrogen, because corn gluten meal, in addition to preventing crabgrass from germinating, it also does supply a good amount of nitrogen to the soil. And if you add more, you could overdo it and get this super succulent growth that can be really welcome to fungal issues and pests and things like that. So I would be really careful of that.
That first one, though, might be the crabgrass preventer plus green up. So there might be
fertilizer already in there. I would really, I don't want you to overdo it. I think using one or the other is good. And if you're going to do the Jonathan Green step by step, then stick with that product line.
Okay. I did get the 3-4-3 Revita.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
At Hans.
Good.
And I just thought, you know, it would be an extra, charge.
No, more is not better when it comes to fertilizer.
The plants can only take so much, but that Revita can be used in all sorts of other places in the garden.
That's what I was going to say. I use it in my containers.
Jessica used to drive over to Ohio in her truck and get us all our supplies from Ohio Earth Food, and we would be so excited to pick up our Revita and our Pro Planting potting soil and all those great Ohio Earth products that Han carries. I mean, you can find them at some other places. I think at Beaver, the Beaver Agway has Ohio Earth Foods.
Okay.
That's where I got it, was at Han's and so on. So I'm going to hold off on the Revita.
Yeah, don't do it on the lawn. You can use it in your vegetable garden. You can use a little bit in containers.
Anywhere you put it, things are going to grow.
And as long as it stays dry, you can keep it for many years. Like, I've been using the same bag now for a couple of years because they're such big bags. It's not like it's going to expire or something like that if you don't use it all this year.
And it smells good, too.
And it doesn't smell so good. Thanks,
Belle.
All right, down to the final few minutes. Let's get Teresa from McDonald on the air here. Go ahead, Teresa.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I have a question to ask about my pear tree. Last year, a portion of my pear tree came down because of weather. And then just in February, another portion of it came down. I still have like a third of the tree left, and it has blossomed really. It really looks beautiful. It has blossomed. It still looks alive and healthy. Do you think that I should cut it all down, or do you think I should just trim it and try to take care of it and hope that it still lasts?
Is this a pear, like a fruiting pear, or is this an ornamental flower?
Ornamental.
Okay, so yeah, it's a Bradford pear.
Yeah.
I would personally always, with Bradford pears, recommend cutting them down and getting rid of them. Here's the reason why. There's two reasons why. One, it is a tree with an extremely weak crotch system. So every time that's why so many pieces break off.
It was such a big deal when they became popular.
Oh my gosh.
And everybody
planted them.
Every neighborhood has them, and they're so beautiful. But then, as when we talk to anybody that's a arborist, especially those guys from Davie, when you mention Bradford pear, they give you the stink eye.
There's actually communities now that are paying residents to take down their Bradford pears, because not only are they really weak and break off a lot, but they're very invasive. The birds eat those little tiny pear berries that are produced, and they spread the seeds, and they are really kind of displacing some forests and native plants.
Up in Slippery Rock, they've got fire blight bad on those trees. Remember, the organic gardeners always aim to create a better place to garden
and a safer place to live.